and welcome to minute 42 of season 3 of Movie Raw Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Travis Bowe of Marvel Events Timeline. Welcome back to the show, Travis.
Thank you for having me back.
Well, why not? You know, well, I don't want to be the one who has to go tell Carl, you know, what happened.
Fine, I'll tell him.
Okay, you do that. So, minute 42 begins with Hans having a realization and ends with a shot from above of McClane riding on the roof of the elevator. So, as we ended things yesterday, you know, Hans, Fritz, and Alexander happened to come across a dead Tony dressed up for Christmas, hanging out in the elevator with a little bit of holiday cheer on his shirt.
Yeah.
And basically Hans and Fritz are trying to figure out what's going on. And Hans goes, he starts this minute by saying, no, this is something else.
It's very perceptive of Hans.
Yes.
To just to kind of immediately figure that they're not dealing with a security guard.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, I like that also. I like the fact that, you know, Fritz's idea is a good idea, but he doesn't know how much planning Hans has gone into this whole thing. I've discussed this with earlier guests, you know, that we can tell that Hans has compartmentalized all of the information here. He is the only one who knows the entire plan. I mean, even Theo doesn't know the whole plan.
True.
And Carl doesn't know the whole, I mean, nobody knows the whole plan except for him. So, I mean, if something happens to him, he's, you know, it's not going to work.
Right.
He's got everything planned out here, and therefore he knows how many security guards are supposed to be in the room or in the building. And he also knows that this is something else because this is not something I guess you could say lowly security guard would do in Hans's mind. You know, it's something else. And it couldn't also just be someone from the party.
Right.
You know, there's something strange here. Yeah.
The Joker in The Dark Knight is when he plans that, you know, that heist that we see in the beginning of Dark Knight, like he's the only one that knows all the steps of everyone that he's going to double cross and everything. So, yeah.
So are you saying that Hans is the Joker or that the Joker is Hans?
Yes.
Okay. Well, which of them do you think is a better villain?
Ooh.
Because I've seen a lot of lists and the two of them are always at the top. And it's a debate as to which of them is considered the better movie villain.
Man. I'd say the Joker's more ambitious. And the Joker, for as much telling everyone that he doesn't plan things out, like every detail in that movie, like he planned down to the, you know, the nth degree. Whereas Hans is a little bit more upfront about it, although he is, I guess, disguising this whole plan as a terrorist plot. So maybe not. I don't know which one's more. Joker's more interesting, for sure.
Well, I think they're both very interesting.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we'll leave people to think about that one.
Yeah.
could go either way. Which again is probably why, you know, there's so much debate online as to which of the two of them is the better villain.
Yeah.
Because they have lots of differences, but also similarities between the two of them.
Right.
You know, again, we don't know anything about the background of either one of them.
Yeah.
You know, anything that the Joker tells us, we know he could be lying or he could be telling the truth. And with Hans, we don't know anything about him except that he used to be part of a terrorist organization that no longer wants to have anything to do with him.
Yeah,
that's all we know. So, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see. Maybe something will come up later on. And then, as this is all going on, we hear a woman screaming in the background saying, "Oh, they're gonna kill us!" Which I never caught until, you know, watching it minute by minute and you know, looking at the dialogue you know, in the everything that and the subtitles. And I was like, wow, I never even noticed that, because it's something, because
yeah,
we're focused on Hans and Fritz talking.
Yeah.
You know, so we don't really notice that someone else just screams that, you know, just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it's the same woman who screamed yesterday who was just hired to scream. I don't know. Don't know. They said, okay, we don't want to pay someone else, so you just scream, and then a few seconds later you'll scream, oh, they're going to kill us. And that's it. You know, maybe that works that way. Yeah. You know, SAG rules. You know. Who knows? So then the, you know, as the two of them are having their discussion, all right, we get to see, I mean, first of all, the two of them are talking in German, so we don't really know, partially, I mean, throughout this movie, you know, the terrorists switch languages quite quickly. You know, sometimes they're talking in German and sometimes they're speaking in English. You would think that they would all speak in English because they all are from apparently different countries and they all speak different languages. So there's no like common language between them, even though we know that a few of them are German. So that,
right.
You know, but then again, okay, if there are a few that are German, so the ones that are German are going to speak to each other in German. But then you would think that they would always be talking to each other in German.
Yeah, I think in moments like this where he's exasperated a little bit, he's, you know, maybe not, he may still have to, I don't know what it's like to just fluently speak multiple languages. So I don't know if there's ever like, if you're stressed, then suddenly your brain isn't trying to translate what he has to say. So I just assume it's a byproduct of being in this moment of kind of stress and having to worry about Carl and things like that.
Okay, there is something to that. I mean, I am bilingual. You know, I speak both Hebrew and English, and sometimes I will have words come out while I'm speaking a different language. You know, I'll be speaking English and I'll throw in a Hebrew word and I won't even notice. You know, I've done that sometimes in recording also, and it's really funny to me because, you know, because whoever I'm talking to just doesn't notice that I did it because they don't understand what I'm saying. And I listen to it afterwards and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I said that instead of saying something else. And sometimes I'll be talking to someone in one language and without noticing, I will just speak the other language also.
Okay.
You know, and it happens when, you know, mostly when I'm tired or I wouldn't necessarily stress because, you know, thankfully as a, you know, someone who has movies all around the clock to keep me, you know, stress free. So I don't have to worry about that.
But maybe during moments of concentration, maybe when you slip into one or the other. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Definitely makes sense. And at this point, we see the grates of the elevator. Like again, we were talking yesterday about the cinematography. It's a great fluid shot that the camera just pans above their heads and hits the grate above them, and then it goes through the grate basically, so that we can see on the other side, and we see that McClane is standing or crouching on top of the elevator itself. You know, he's listening and watching. Yes. And I love the way they do this because on Friday when we saw him push the buttons and you know, send the elevator down, we don't 100% know that that's what that's part of his plan.
Sure.
That he's about to, you know, jump on top of the elevator in order to listen, you know, as to what's going on.
Yeah. It's a nice surprise. I like it.
Yeah. They do it really well. And then we have then they switch back into English, I guess, for our benefit. And so we hear, you know, John is listening and we hear as he's hearing, we have to do something, Hans. Yes, we do. We have to tell Carl his brother is dead. Tell him to come down. And then Fritz takes the walkie-talkie and goes, Carl. And we hear Carl say, yeah. And then they speak again in German. And then we hear Hans turn to someone else and he goes, Franco. You and Fritz take the body upstairs and out of sight. So again, Franco wasn't even around. I don't know where he is. He must have been on the other side of the room. Somehow he showed up, you know, around there. And then the next line is just great because what Hans basically says is, I don't want the hostages to think too much.
Huh.
Okay. What do you think that means?
Maybe he doesn't want too many of the hostages thinking that there's hope, or that they, that obviously that they don't have things under control. I mean, he literally was just talking about control, and now this is kind of spitting in the face of that. So
yeah, I completely agree that that's probably what he's referring to there. It makes a lot of sense, saying he doesn't want them to think too much about the fact that it's possible to kill one of us.
Yeah.
You know, that as you said, there is hope. You know, keep the hope down. I don't know.
Right.
Right. But he's even in this situation, he's still very calm and stays collective. You know, he doesn't get stressed out here. He's not screaming. Obviously, I'm assuming he's a little disappointed that he's lost one of his men, but he doesn't have an emotional connection.
Yeah, he's not overly concerned. I don't think
he's more worried. He's more worried about how Carl's going to respond. Not
exactly.
Not how he is. I mean, we've touched upon this a little bit in the past, that the big question is, and we don't know the real answer to this, is, okay, how did this group get together? Is it that Hans decided to, you know, hire all these mercenaries to be with him? Are they people that he worked with in the past? You know, has he worked maybe with Carl in the past and Carl knows some of them? And, you know, how did it all come together? You know, they missed a great opportunity for a prequel, you know, to put them all together.
Yeah, I definitely get the sense that Hans and Carl have probably the most history out of any of these guys. Maybe Hans, Carl, and Tony. And then the rest of the guys are all just hired mercenaries.
Right. And I'm not sure where Theo would fit into that, because on the one hand, Hans, you know, is very informal with Theo. You know, he's not like, he doesn't act as if he's his superior in a forceful way. You know, like in the line that we had a few weeks ago where he said, you do know how to break the code. And he goes, well, you didn't bring me here for my charming personality.
Right.
But we still get the impression that, okay, Theo doesn't know the whole plan. Because if he doesn't even know
how that last lock,
how that seventh lock is going to get opened. Exactly. Which I don't know. If I was a lock picker or lock breaker, whatever you want to call what Theo does, you know, I would be concerned as to how the last lock is going to go. You know, if you're going on a mission or a job or whatever it is, you want to have confidence that, you know, that everything's going to work out, and not just the assurance of Hans, but maybe he knows Hans from the past and says, okay, I know I can trust this guy. Right. If he tells me he knows how to do it, then, you know, I'm not worried about it. I don't know. But again, even in these circumstances, he's unemotional, which works.
Sure.
You know, there's no emotional attachment to Tony from Hans's perspective here. And then we get a shot of McLean, and we see that he is basically, he's got a black Sharpie. It would have been nice if he did a red Sharpie, because then we really know where that came from. But he has a black. Right. Well, actually, the fact that he has a black Sharpie, I think, tells us that he found, you know, a group of Sharpies. So maybe he found a red one also along with it.
There you go.
A rainbow color.
The Sharpie mystery has been solved.
That's right.
Now, I really like this bit of business with the list of names that he's keeping on his arm. I like that there's a tally.
Yes.
You know, he's keeping count of, I think, just how many terrorists are here. And then, he's starting to write down their names, which I like. They don't make a big deal about this throughout the movie, except probably later when probably the first conversation, I think, that John and Hans have, and John essentially lists everyone's name that he is now aware of, just to kind of show Hans, you know, some of John's cards.
Right.
So I really like that, this little list.
Right. Business. And he marks down on his arm, he has six, you know, he has, you know, four lines with a line crossed through them, so that's five. And then he has a sixth one. So he basically has counted off six terrorists here. Now, based on what you know, okay, who do you think the six people are that he's referring to, that he's seen? Who has he seen up until now?
He's seen Tony, and now he knows Hans, and what's the long hair guy?
Carl.
In the
Oh, Fritz.
Fritz. So he's definitely seen those three. They've spoken about Carl, so that's four.
Okay.
I don't think they've said any other names yet. I'm trying to remember where he's been at this point, because he's been in the I think he's seen the big guy from Ghostbusters 2.
Yes.
Okay. He's seen him through a doorway.
That's
maybe
right.
He saw him
with Fritz and Marco when they were, you know, going through the rooms.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know he opened one door and saw some people with the missile launchers.
There you go. Okay. So I'm up to eight. Counted eight. But he only marks off six. Okay.
Unless some of the guys were, well, I don't know if any of them were the same people in two locations.
Fritz was in two locations, which I didn't count him twice.
Yeah.
So he has the two that he saw in the hallway. Okay. The two that he saw in the hallway pulling people out of the rooms. Two that he saw in the hallway with the rocket. Okay. Then we have Hans. Then we have Carl. Then we have Fritz. And then beyond that, we have Tony. So we have a total of eight so far that we can count.
Yeah.
So
possibly he's not counting Tony because Tony is dead. He's out of the equation. True. He doesn't matter at this point.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. Okay. No, but it's interesting to think about that how he's counting them, because it's also possible that he doesn't remember if, you know, who he saw before. Is it the same person? You know, because we know he saw Fritz twice. So is he referring to him once? Is he referring to him twice? You know, you know, he's in a stressful situation. So for sure, he's trying to think to himself, okay, well, wait a second. Did I see this guy before or not? I don't know.
Yeah.
Wait, this is the guy with the brown long hair, or this is the guy with the blonde long hair? You know?
Right. It's a list of confirmed terrorists, I suppose.
Exactly. And then we get a great shot of the elevator shaft, which again shows how complicated all the mechanisms are in the elevators. You know, and we see, you know, we hear another elevator coming down as this one starts to go up, which is also great. You know, he has no control over where he's going. He's on he's apparently on top of the elevator that Franco and Fritz are now taking to go do something with Tony's body.
Okay, right.
And then you have the other elevator coming down with Carl.
Okay. In my head, the elevator only goes up because Carl's coming down. I'm sure that's not how elevators work. You don't have to have one counterbalancing the other to...
There are some that do, but not in this case.
Sure. So as I've always just watched this, I just have always assumed, oh, one goes up because the other one's coming down. And so I'm thinking, is Fritz and the dead body still in the elevator? That's weird. But then, you're right. Hans has told Fritz to take the body upstairs and
out of sight,
dispose of it or whatever.
Just throw him up.
Sure.
We don't need that.
Okay. So that makes a lot more sense than just why I have. Yeah. I always saw this as a weird, cause and effect with Carl going down, but it makes a lot more sense that they're purposefully going up to dispose of Tony.
Well, that's the fun of doing this movie minute by minute.
Yeah.
you learn new things that you didn't think about beforehand.
Right.
And then they do something very strange here. They give us about 30 seconds of the elevator, moving.
Yeah.
And you'd think that when they're editing something like this, they would cut it down. But I think they do it because, and it's very effective in the way that they want to show us how integral the elevator shaft is to this whole movie. And they want us to see it. They want us to see, how the inner workings of the elevator shaft work in order for later on when John is back in it and, jumping back and forth and trying to stay away from the elevators that are coming up or going down or whatever, things like that, that we now have, had these 25 or 30 seconds to keep it, to have it explained in our minds, I guess you can say.
Sure.
And as the elevator is going up, once again we get a great cinematographic. How would you say that? A great shot. A great
Yeah, that's a tough, yeah.
shot. A great shot.
Some good photography.
Yes, where it's a shot from above, and we see John coming towards us, and he's looking down. He's not even looking up. And, that's basically how this minute ends. So is there anything else you wanted to talk about in this minute before we get into the script?
I don't think so. I think I'm pretty good on this one. I do, I guess I this kind of applies to anywhere, but I do suppose that since John and Hans are physically as close as they've been to each other so far, it's nice that the whole like keeping Hans hidden, keeping his face hidden so that John doesn't know who he is immediately
Just hears his
later.
voice.
Yeah. So it's easy to overlook, I think, but I do like it.
Yeah, I think they do a great job with that also. So the script has some nice explanations and descriptions that help us understand things a little more. First of all, instead of McClane writing on his arm, he writes in a weather-beaten cop's notebook. Right, and it says the first notation is number of hostages. It says number of hostages, Holly plus 30 odd. Then it says number of terrorists with a question mark. And as we watch, he adds 3 question mark, 1 in lobby question mark, 2 plus with hostages question mark, plus 1 on 87-H roof 3. So again, it's less effective than having him write it on his arm. I think it's great. I'll have to keep an eye out if it actually still appears on his arm throughout the rest of the movie. I assume it doesn't. We'll have to wait and see. And then he writes on his arm, Hans equals leader. Sorry, he writes in the notebook, Hans equals leader, Carl equals brother. Use this? Question mark.
Okay.
So yeah, it's effective. But
Yeah, with it being a notebook, it's fine to have that much information, but I'm glad I like the your arm is only so big, you only have so much room and time to lay out all this stuff, so I like how succinct it is
right. And also,
on
I
his arm.
mean, why would he have his detective notebook with him? He basically emptied out his pockets, and he's walking barefoot. He's not wearing a shirt. Like, why would he still have the detective notebook on it? So it also shows more how streetwise he is. The fact that he's improvising on the fly by having a Sharpie, and marking it down on his arm. And then they have a great description here about the elevator shaft. It says, on top of the car, listening to the conversation below, Franco and Fritz step into the car, and the doors on the elevator close. The car accelerates upwards, and McClane grabs onto the heavy grease-coated cables to keep his balance. Already, his clothes are soiled. His face and feet, arms and hair are dark from the dirt and sweat. The car speeds up the shaft, passing the car, bringing Carl down to the hostage floor, and stops at the machine floor. The doors open, and McClane hears them roll the chair with the body off the car. McClane then looks up. So again, it's very descriptive, and it gives us more information about what's really going on here, which is great. Every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition, where either myself or my guest will give a little story, anecdote of an adventure, misadventure, or something that might have happened to one of us, somehow related to the holiday season, any holiday, all year round. So what have you got for us, Travis?
This is I remember one Christmas my parents were wrapping presents, and everything was in boxes, so there wasn't like any reason to keep it hidden from me and my sister. And I offered to help wrap some of my sister's presents, and they said, "Yeah, go for it. It's that pile over there with the green ribbons." My parents weren't big on like putting name tags on every single gift, and so it said, yeah, go ahead and wrap or finish wrapping. They were already wrapped. So I started taping the hell out of all of my sister's gifts and like just really, you know, going after. I think I got shipping tape, you know, so it's even harder for her to open. And then come to find out Christmas morning, as I'm starting to unwrap the stuff, all of mine are very tough to get open because they had told me I was wrapping my sister's stuff. And I pulled a prank on myself. So,
well, you didn't pull a prank on yourself. Your parents pulled a prank on you.
Well, yeah.
Because they made you believe that it was your sister's.
So
be careful what presents you tape with shipping tape.
Yeah, just instant karma, you know. Yeah,
that's true. So, makes sense. All right, great. You want to tell people once again where they can find Travis Bowe?
Sure. Check out, I did one of these Movies by Minutes podcasts called Watchmen Minute, where we went through the director's cut of Watchmen, of Zack Snyder's Watchmen, 1 minute at a time. That is fully completed. You can listen to all 186 episodes of that. Just search Watchmen Minute just about anywhere. So there you go.
Okay, and I first want to actually mention, I haven't mentioned this up until now, that if anyone looks at the logo for this season, Travis very kindly helped me create the logo. I sent him something and he told me it was crap and, you know, made something new. So that's great. You know, I'm not good at these things, but apparently Travis is much better. So if you look at any of the logos, you know, they're Travis made. So thanks again to Travis for those.
No problem.
All right. Appreciate it.
I want your listeners to know I did not say your original look like crap.
Well, you said it in a nice way.
Yeah.
I didn't say that you said it directly that way, but that's fine. I was trying to make it easier for you, but you know, if you didn't think it was aesthetically looking, so I guess it was easier for you. It's easier on your eyes to spend the extra, I don't know, however long it took you to make it, you know, to put it together instead of having to look at what I tried putting it together. So whatever. That's fine. I take no offense and I appreciate it. I'm thanking you. I'm not, you know,
oh, yeah.
I'm not being facetious about it. Not at all. All right. And finding me is very simple. All you have to do is a quick search anywhere for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, which is movierobminute.com. You can find me on Twitter and you can find me on Facebook. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.